Welcome to Project I Am with Dr. David Schloss. Grab your coffee, green tea, or smoothie. Find your favorite listening spot or put on your walking shoes. Ready? Let's go.
Hello and welcome to Project I Am. In today's episode, we're going to dive deep into the heart of therapy, the healing power of human connection. You see, while theories and techniques matter, research and experience remind us that it's the relationship between therapist and client that changes lives. But the truth is that leaning into that connection, well, it takes courage, it takes vulnerability, and a willingness to be real. In this episode, we'll explore why the therapeutic relationship is more important than any intervention. We'll also look at why therapists sometimes hesitate to prioritize it, and how embracing the beauty of authentic relationship can transform not only our clients, but also ourselves. Whether you're a mental health professional, a student, or simply someone passionate about growth and healing, this conversation is for you. Let's step into the heart of what makes therapy truly beautiful and powerful. Let's begin. But quickly, before we do, here is the disclaimer.
This podcast is created for educational and inspirational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional mental health services, diagnosis, or treatment. Although Dr. Schloss is a licensed mental health professional, listening to this podcast does not create a therapeutic relationship. The content shared here is intended to support your personal development and mental wellness journey, but it should not be considered medical or psychological advice tailored to your individual situation. If you are in need of therapeutic support, please seek help from a qualified mental health provider in your area. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, please contact a local crisis line or emergency services immediately. Views expressed by any guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily reflect views of Dr. Schloss or the views of Project I Am.
Hello and welcome to Project I Am. Today we're diving into an idea that might gently challenge the way we think about therapy. The notion that the relationship between therapist and client is more important than any particular theory or technique. If you're a mental health professional or student, you've likely learned various treatment models and interventions. I know I did when I was in school. But you may also have sensed that there's something deeper, the human connection, that plays a huge role in healing. In this episode, I want to explore that feeling with you in a conversational, therapeutic, and hopefully inspirational way. I want to invite you to get comfortable and maybe take a slow breath. Let's reflect on our work as helpers. We'll talk about why the therapeutic relationship is so central, why therapists, including me at times, can be hesitant to lean fully into that relationship, and what we stand to gain, personally and professionally, when we find the courage to connect authentically. Along the way, I'll share some stories. Most of them are going to be composite examples drawn from real life, some research findings, and some insights from relational cultural theory and Carl Rogers' person-centered approach. My hope is that this feels encouraging and thought-provoking for you, like a warm conversation with a colleague that also nudges you outside of your comfort zone, maybe just a little. So whether you're driving to class, taking a break between sessions, or relaxing at home, thanks for spending this time with me. Now, let's start by looking at why so many seasoned therapists say it's the relationship that heals. You might be familiar with the phrase, the therapeutic alliance. That's essentially the working relationship and bond between therapist and client, the trust, mutual understanding, and collaboration you build together. Research consistently shows that this alliance is a strong, if not the strongest, predictor of positive therapy outcomes. For example, a comprehensive meta-analysis of nearly 200 studies found that the quality of the therapist-client alliance significantly correlates with treatment success, with an effect size indicating a moderate to large impact on outcomes. That was Horvath et al. 2011. In plain terms, how we relate to our clients often matters more than what specific interventions we use. In fact, the person of the therapist, our empathy, our warmth, our genuineness, and our ability to form a connection may account for more outcome variance than the particular therapeutic modality. Studies on therapist effects have found that individual therapists themselves explain around 5% of the differences in client outcomes, whereas the specific treatment approach accounts for only 1%. That might not sound huge, but think of it this way. Who you are and how you connect with clients may be 5 times more influential than the theory you follow. This aligns with the classic finding often called the common factors perspective, which suggests that factors present in any effective therapy, like empathy, trust, and hope, underlie much of the healing, while differences between, say, CBT versus psychodynamic techniques are comparatively minor. Even Carl Rogers, the famous humanistic psychologist who developed person-centered therapy, emphasized this point. Rogers believed that if he could provide a certain kind of relationship, clients would naturally grow and heal. He famously said something along the lines of this. In my early professional years, I asked, how can I treat, cure, or change this person? Now I would ask, how can I provide a relationship which this person may use for their own growth? You see, his approach centered on offering unconditional positive regard, empathy, and genuineness, which he considered not just helpful add-ons, but essential and sufficient conditions for therapeutic change. Modern research backs this up. For instance, meta-analyses have shown that therapist empathy and acceptance strongly predict client improvement. In other words, Rogers was onto something big. The healing power lies in the quality of the relationship itself. You see, I've often found that when a client feels truly seen, heard, and valued by the therapist, a lot can happen. The client will then take risks to open up more, to face painful feelings, or try new behaviors because they trust that the therapist is with them. That trust can literally be life-changing. Psychologist Bruce Wampold and others have noticed that forming a strong alliance early on is critical. Many clients decide in the first session or two whether this therapist is someone they can trust and engage with. If they feel a genuine connection, they are more likely to stay in therapy and benefit, but if not, they may withdraw or even drop out prematurely. Indeed, a weak alliance has been linked to higher dropout rates and poorer outcomes, regardless of the treatment model. Let's bring this to life with a brief example. Consider a composite client. Let's call her Mia. Now, when I say composite client, what I mean is I've gathered up factors of a few of my clients and I've put it together for illustration purposes. Mia has struggled with anxiety for years and has seen a couple of therapists before. They were all competent and they followed their training manuals diligently. But in Mia's words, she said this, "It felt like they were doing procedures to me, not with me." Did you hear that? She felt like they were doing procedures to her and not with her. You see, in our hypothetical scenario, Mia finally meets therapist A, who takes a different approach. In their first session, therapist A is warm, down to earth, and curious about Mia as a person, not just about her symptoms. When Mia's eyes fill with tears describing her daily fears, therapist A leans in softly and says, "I can only imagine how hard this has been. I am really glad that you told me." Mia senses real empathy. Over the next few sessions, therapist A remembers little details about Mia's life, follows up on her week and how it went, and gently laughs with her at a couple of Mia's self-deprecating jokes, treating her like a human being, not a checklist. Mia later reports that for the first time in therapy, she feels safe and truly cared about. With that foundation, she gradually opens up about deeper issues that she's never shared before. Together, they make more progress in a few months than Mia did in years of more technique-focused therapy. Now, understand what I'm saying, right? I'm not trying to say this to disparage techniques. Techniques are important tools, right? Interventions are important. CBT methods, trauma processing skills, mindfulness practices, these all have great values. But tools don't work if the client cannot trust the person using them. When we prioritize the relationship, we set the stage for any intervention to actually land and to take root. You see, as one psychotherapy researcher aptly put it, the therapeutic relationship acts as a vehicle through which specific techniques exert their influence. I'll say that again. That was Norcross in 2010 on the APA Task Force, said this, the therapeutic relationship acts as a vehicle through which specific techniques exert their influence. So, if relationship is so crucial, why would any therapist hesitate to prioritize it? Now, this is where things actually get a little bit more interesting, because knowing something and doing something are different. So let's explore some reasons that therapists hold back from going all in on authentic connection. Are you curious to hear more? Because I'm curious to tell you. So why do therapists hesitate to prioritize the relationship? If you're feeling a little bit of discomfort or resistance with the idea of leaning more into the relationship with clients, well, you're not alone. Many therapists have felt that hesitation. It might stem from our training, our fears, our ideas of what professionalism should be. And here are a few common reasons that come up. One of them is training and theoretical orientation. You see, in graduate programs and internships, there is oftentimes a heavy emphasis on learning specific theories and evidence-based techniques. New therapists may worry that if they just focus on rapport and understanding, that they're not doing enough. There can be implicit messages that technique is king. You must do the protocol right. For example, one therapist recounted that in her training, the teaching was to quickly fix and not dig in, meaning that there was pressure to use techniques to alleviate symptoms fast rather than sit with the client in their pain. That's like chopping off branches but not pulling up something by the roots. But that's besides the point. Okay, so with that mindset, spending extra time building the relationship feels like a luxury, or sometimes for some people feels like a weakness. Therapists fresh out of school might think that they'll be judged for not being structured or manualized enough, or not following a particular protocol. So training and theoretical orientation is one reason. Another reason is fear of vulnerability. Prioritizing the relationship means being more real and emotionally present. And let's face it, that can be scary. As therapists, we are human beings too, and we have feelings and insecurities, so many insecurities. Truly connecting with a client might stir up our own emotions. We might feel sadness when a client cries, or affection for a client who's struggling, or frustration or uncertainty. And we think about transference and counter-transference and all that kind of stuff, right? Showing empathy and authenticity sometimes requires vulnerability on our part. Maybe not sharing all our personal details, right? But allowing ourselves to feel and be affected by our client in the session. Many of us may have an internalized fear that says, if I really let my true feelings show, will I seem incompetent? Or what if I get overwhelmed with this client? You know, what if I make it about me when it's supposed to be about them? According to researcher Brené Brown, vulnerability is not weakness, but it's rather the birthplace of love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, and creativity. Yet embracing vulnerability takes courage. And honestly, guys, that's natural to be fearful about it, right? It's a lot. Another reason is professional boundaries and roles. Oftentimes as therapists, you know, we worry about maintaining proper boundaries and professionalism. We're taught, rightly, to avoid dual relationships, not to burden the client with our issues, and to maintain a helpful degree of neutrality. All of this is true. I want to emphasize, we are rightly taught to avoid dual relationships and not to burden the client with our issues, right? I agree with those things. But sometimes these valid ethical guidelines can be misinterpreted or taken to an extreme where the therapist becomes overly distant or hard to read. Therapists might think that being professional means being somewhat stoic or a blank slate. They might hold back warmth or humor or personal reactions out of concern that it's unprofessional. There's also the old stereotype of the detached Freudian analyst silently stroking his beard While most modern therapists aren't that aloof, the field's history can still instill a caution about don't get too close to your client or you'll lose objectivity. In truth, guys, it's absolutely possible to be both deeply caring and to have boundaries. But finding that balance can be tricky, and we might err on the side of caution, unintentionally slipping into a cooler, more distant stance than is actually quite necessary, right? Another reason is fear of overstepping or hurting the client, and this is a valid fear. Some clinicians worry that focusing on the relationship could lead them to self-disclose too much, or say the wrong thing and somehow harm the client. For instance, the therapist might sense that sharing a bit of their own relevant experience would really humanize them and help the client feel less alone. But then there's this inner voice that says, no, don't. This isn't about you. What if it's too much and the client feels uncomfortable? Even offering a sincere compliment or expressing sadness in response to a client's story can feel forbidden to some therapists who are trained to keep their own feelings out of the session. This fear can make us hold back genuine empathy or warmth. We might default to textbook responses because it feels safer than risking a more heartfelt connection, especially when we're not sure how the client will receive it. Another potential reason is personal discomfort with intimacy. We need to acknowledge that therapists are people who have their own relational patterns. Some of us might have a harder time with intimacy or emotional openness in general, and that could be one of the reasons we're interested in understanding emotions. Sometimes it's our actual work that teaches us what we need to learn. If a therapist has unresolved issues around trust or connection, it can feel safer to hide behind techniques, diagnoses, or being in the expert role than to meet the client, human to human. As early counseling scholar Wendy Dryden pointed out, an insecure therapist is more likely to hide behind technique rather than being open and authentic in order to truly connect. Using formal techniques or strict structure can become a shield, a way to avoid the messy, unpredictable, but ultimately rewarding terrain of real relationships. Okay, so as I shared those, right, fear of vulnerability, training and theoretical orientation, boundaries and roles, fear of overstepping and hurting a client, personal discomfort with intimacy, as I shared those, do any of those resonate with you? It's worth gently noticing if you felt one or more of these concerns. I know I have. I mean, I remember in my early career that I went from one extreme to the other. On the one side, I used to follow a theory to the letter, and that was lousy at building rapport. And I also remember going to the other extreme and being too relational and not boundaried enough and getting into trouble for that. I used to swing between these two extremes, right? And neither of them were healthy. And I think I've managed to find a place of balance. It's been challenging, right? And I think especially, you know, once you've made a mistake, the fear of staying very boundaried away from that gray area, right? Away from that place of relational connection where there's opportunity to be misunderstood. We oftentimes step way back into that area, but I don't think that that's where the work is. I think that's overly safe, and I don't think that is productive for the client. I think it's our jobs as therapists to be boundaried, to do the work so that we can be as relational as possible without causing harm. It takes time and reflection to overcome these hesitations. We have to remember that being a therapist doesn't mean that we're perfect. It doesn't mean that we're all knowing and that we have the right technique or know exactly how to do things all the time. In fact, it's when we try to appear perfect that we create distance. As one author said, people can tell when you're fake. Plus, it's exhausting. And that was Moral in 2018. Clients generally aren't coming to us for a flawlessly performed treatment protocol. They're coming in pain, and what they're looking for is a safe relationship where they can heal. And paradoxically, when we drop the pretenses and connect person to person, our professional effectiveness actually increases, not decreases. Let me just say that again so that you hear me really clearly. When we drop the pretenses and connect person to person, that is when our professional effectiveness increases, not decreases. So what happens if we don't address these hesitations? Let's talk about the costs of avoiding authentic connection, both for our clients and for ourselves. If a therapist consistently holds back and keeps the relationship at a shallow, formal level, there are consequences. They may not be immediately obvious, but over time they can really undermine the therapy and the therapist. Here are some of the personal and professional costs when we avoid leaning into a real relationship with clients. 1. Clients sense the distance. Clients are very perceptive about a therapist's authenticity. Even if they can't pinpoint it, they can feel that something may be off. Maybe the therapist is technically polite and attentive, but the client doesn't feel genuinely understood or cared for. This can lead to a lack of trust. Clients might then be less open about their feelings or less honest about setbacks, which limits the progress of therapy. In worst cases, they disengage or drop out. Research indicates that lack of a strong therapeutic alliance, lack of that relational connection is a major factor in premature termination of therapy. Imagine a client coming in with deep shame or trauma. If they sense that the therapist is emotionally distant or just going through the motions, they may conclude, even if it is unconsciously, that this isn't a place where they can truly open up. And so the real issues, what they're really struggling with, stays hidden, and the therapy remains superficial. Another cost of avoiding authentic connection is reduced effectiveness of techniques. Without a solid relationship, even the best techniques can fall flat. It's like throwing seeds on hard, dry soil. For example, a therapist might be extremely skilled in CBT and offer excellent reframing for clients' negative thoughts, but if the client doesn't feel the therapist really gets them, the client might just nod and say that they'll try the homework while internally thinking, "You don't really understand how I feel, but okay." There's minimal buy-in. On the flip side, when a client truly trusts the therapist, they're more willing to engage with challenging interventions because they have faith that the therapist has their back. Avoiding authentic connection robs interventions of the warmth and empathy that activates them. Another cost of avoiding authentic connection is missed opportunities for healing relational wounds. You see, many clients come in with relational trauma or attachment wounds. They've been hurt in relationships, or they've never had a secure, trusting relationship in the first place. And therapy offers an amazing opportunity for a corrective emotional experience where a client can often, for the first time, feel safe, respected, and valued in a real relationship. But if we as therapists stay in our comfort zone and hold back our humanity, we might unintentionally replicate emotional distance. The client might feel that familiar sense of not being seen, which is the opposite of what could heal them. By avoiding closeness, we could be reinforcing the very patterns of isolation or mistrust that clients are trying to overcome. Another cost of avoiding authentic connection is therapist burnout and demoralization. This one is about us as therapists or healing professionals. Constantly holding back our true self, essentially doing emotional labor to appear more professional or less emotionally affected than we really are. Well, guys, that's draining. It's like wearing a mask for 8 hours a day. By the end, you're exhausted, and over time, this contributes to burnout. When we avoid authentic connection, we also rob ourselves of one of the most rewarding aspects of the work, the genuine human-to-human fulfillment that comes from meaningful connection. Research on therapeutic authenticity suggests that masking our own personality and feelings is linked to higher stress and burnout, whereas working in a more genuine, congruent way can increase job satisfaction. If you want to look it up, that's Burks and Robbins 2012 and Morrill 2018. Think about it. If every session feels like you're just delivering a service but not connecting, well, therapy becomes a soulless grind. Many therapists report that the moments of true connection, a shared laugh with a client, tears in your eyes because you could really feel the client's sorrow, a heartfelt exchange of gratitude at the end, Well, those moments are what keep us passionate about the profession. And avoiding those moments means losing the immense joy and meaning that comes with this work, which can really make us question why we're doing this in the first place and lead to demoralization. The last reason I'm going to share about the costs of avoiding authentic connection is this: stunted professional growth. Another subtle cost is that by avoiding depth in the therapeutic relationship, therapists may stall their own growth as clinicians. It's in the challenging, real moments, navigating a rupture with a client, dealing with strong feelings in the room, being honest and compassionate at the same time, dealing with the here and now, that we really develop our craft. If we never go there, we might become technically proficient, but never evolve into the truly great healers that we could be. It's the difference between a surface-level practitioner and a deeply effective therapist who can work with the whole person. By sidestepping the relational depth, we miss out on learning important lessons about ourselves, like how to maintain boundaries while still being open, how to use our intuition, how to tolerate emotional intensity, and about the art of therapy. So I've listed 5 costs for you, and these costs sound serious, and, well, they are. But the very fact that we can recognize them is a positive thing. It means that we have a choice. We can acknowledge, yes, leaning into the relationship with a client is a bit scary, but I see why it's worth it. Now, that's the first spark of courage, and courage is exactly what we need to talk about next. The courage to lean into relationship-focused work. Choosing to prioritize the therapeutic relationship to be more authentic and present is an act of courage. It means taking calculated risks and tolerating vulnerability as a therapist. This can be slightly challenging, okay? But in a good way, it stretches us and makes us grow. Let's unpack what courage in the therapy room might look like and how we can cultivate it gently and safely. First, let's redefine vulnerability in the context of being a therapist. Brené Brown defines vulnerability as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Does that sound familiar to anyone who's ever sat with a client and not felt entirely sure of what to do next, but knew that by just being present, that was enough? Right? Just being present was important. Now that's vulnerability. It's when a client's story touches our own wounds and you feel that tug on your heart and you stay with it instead of shutting down. It's when you gently say to a client, "I have to admit, I feel a lot of compassion for what you're going through right now." And you worry briefly if it was okay to say that. It's when you acknowledge, maybe out loud, that we, clients and therapists together, are human beings figuring this out, not a superior expert fixing a broken person. All of those moments carry some uncertainty and emotional exposure for the therapist, and yet they also carry great power, the power to forge a stronger connection. So, how do we gather the courage for this? A few thoughts for us as clinicians or clinicians in training. Remember your purpose. Take a moment to reflect on why you became a mental health professional. Chances are that it wasn't to administer manualized interventions, even though they can be useful. More likely, you care about people and want to help them heal and grow. You probably value empathy and human connection deeply. Reconnecting with that core purpose can give you the courage to prioritize what truly matters in the room. When you center yourself on, "I'm here to really be with this person on their journey in their pain," it becomes easier to drop the guard and to be authentic. Another thing you can do is embrace imperfection. Part of the fear of leaning into the relationship is fear of making a mistake or not appearing competent. Ironically, allowing yourself to be imperfect can enhance the relationship. Clients don't need us to be perfect. They need us to be real and reliable. If you fumble for words trying to comfort a client, or if you shed a tear when they share something heart-wrenching, that's okay. In fact, those genuine reactions can be incredibly powerful. It shows the client that you're human and that their story has an impact, which can be validating if done appropriately. Give yourself permission to not have all the answers. As one therapeutic approach, relational cultural theory, posits, mutual empathy involves both people in the room being open to being moved and changed by the interaction. That means that sometimes the therapist might say, "I'm feeling a bit sad hearing this, but I want you to continue. I'm here with you." Acknowledging our own emotion while staying focused on the client. That's what's important. It takes courage to do that, but it really does deepen the trust. Another thing we can do to grow in this and to become more courageous is take small steps in self-disclosure. Now, this is tricky, and I know for many people, for many therapists, self-disclosure is a no-go area. Courage doesn't mean you suddenly start telling your clients your life story or you radically change your style overnight, but you might start by allowing a bit more of your natural warmth into sessions. Maybe you show enthusiasm when a client shares a success, or you say, "I'm really proud of the effort you put in this week," if that fits the moment. See, these small acts of relational behavior, they can feel a bit risky, especially if you've been trained to be more reserved. Try them out and observe the results. Most often, you'll see the client brighten and the rapport strengthen. That positive reinforcement helps build confidence that, hey, being more relational works. If appropriate, you can also practice modest self-disclosure as a way to be authentic. For example, "I also find it hard to speak when I'm feeling hurt. So I really understand how challenging that was for you." Linking it back to the client's experience, research on therapists' self-disclosure shows that it can strengthen the alliance when used judiciously. That's Henretti and Levitt, 2010. Now, the first time you do this, your heart may be pounding a bit, but that's okay. That's courage in action. And each time, it gets a little easier and more natural. I want to just take this moment, because I've mentioned self-disclosure, just to clarify. Self-disclosure always needs to be for the benefit of the client. It never needs to be that much that your client feels that they now have to take care of you. At the same time, self-disclosure can help dismantle the power differential in the relationship. It can encourage a mutuality. And that's a good thing. Another thing we can do to help us build our courage on this journey is increased supervision and support. One practical way to bolster your courage is to use supervision, consultation, or peer support to process your feelings about your clients. When you discuss those vulnerable moments with colleagues or mentors, it normalizes them. If you say, "I really felt like crying with my client, but I was afraid to," and your supervisor responds, "That makes sense. I've been there." What would have happened, do you think, if you had gently let that show? That kind of conversation can be really empowering. Knowing that you have support and that others value the relationship can embolden you to take relational risks. In some cases, you might want to role-play difficult conversations with a supervisor, and that can help you build your skill and your confidence and help you do it in real life. Courage grows in community. You're not alone. We're all in this together. And lastly, self-compassion. It's okay to feel nervous about changing how you relate to clients. Practice some of that compassion on yourself so that you readily give it to clients. If a session doesn't go perfectly, or if you try being more open but it feels awkward, give yourself grace. Reflect on it gently. "I tried something new today because I'm working on being a better therapist. That took courage. It's okay that I feel awkward. I'm learning." When you treat yourself kindly, you reduce the fear of failure, which in turn makes it easier to act with courage next time. As you encourage your clients to do, step out of your comfort zone, then celebrate that you had the bravery to do just that. I want to share a brief story here as a composite example of courage in leaning into relationship. Let's call this person Joe. Joe is a therapist who has always been very by the book. He prided himself on being a strong CBT therapist. One of his clients, James, was a young man dealing with depression after a breakup, James often appeared very skeptical and guarded in sessions. He had his arms crossed, and he responded to Joe's questions with one-word answers. Initially, Joe stuck to his agenda. He'd check James' moods ratings. He'd assign cognitive homework, all that stuff, right? But James wasn't improving. In fact, James started skipping sessions. Joe felt really frustrated, and frankly, he was concerned that he was losing James as his client. In consultation, a colleague gently asked, "Have you talked to James about what the therapy process feels like for him? Does he know that you genuinely care if he's getting something out of this?" Joe realized that he'd been so focused on doing therapy that he hadn't expressed basic human concern. So in the next meeting, he took a breath and a risk, and he said, "James, I want to check in with you. I notice that you sometimes seem a bit hesitant to open up, and I worry that I may not be addressing what you truly need. I just want you to know I'm here for you, and if there's any way I can be more helpful, or if something isn't working, I really welcome your thoughts, because we're in this together." This was not easy for Joe. Joe felt exposed, admitting that he may not be getting it right. James initially shrugged and said that it was fine, but something shifted. A week later, James opened up that he had felt like the therapy was a bit too clinical and that it was hard for him to trust it. This led to a heartfelt discussion where Joe traded his therapist hat for a moment and simply said, "James, I'm sorry it felt that way. I do care about you. Let's figure out together how to make this a place where you feel understood." Now, you see, for James and for Joe, that moment of humility and authenticity, it was a turning point. James' engagement in therapy improved significantly thereafter. He started talking more, and yes, they eventually did get back. And yes, they eventually did get to the CBT techniques, but in the context of a much stronger relationship. Joe later reflected that it was one of the most important lessons of his career, that courageously addressing the relationship saved the therapy, and he felt a renewed sense of purpose and confidence from then on. Courage then? Well, courage is like a muscle. We build, right? It takes time. Each time we choose authenticity over comfort, it grows. And what we discover is that on the other side of that initial discomfort lies something really beautiful, a deeper connection and the rewards that come with it. Let's talk about those rewards. Let's talk about the immense beauty and benefits that happen when we prioritize the relationship. Here's the good news. When we do lean in and make the therapeutic relationship our foundation, the effects can be profoundly positive for our clients and also for ourselves. I want to highlight some of the immense beauty and rewards that come from prioritizing relationship in therapy. This is the inspirational part, guys. This is where if I could reach my hand into your heart and just give you this feeling right now, I would. This is the inspirational part of the podcast, because truly there's something so magical that happens when there is genuine therapeutic connection. Let's talk about first what it does for clients. A strong, authentic therapist-client relationship can be transformative in a client's life. Many people who seek therapy have never experienced a consistently supportive, non-judgmental relationship before. When they finally do, it can alter their whole outlook on themselves and on others. In relational cultural theory, Jean Baker-Miller describes how growth-fostering relationships leads to what she calls the five good things. These are the benefits people gain from healthy, connecting relationships. Do you want to know what those five good things are? Good, because I'm here to tell you. Zest, energy. After a meaningful session, clients often feel a sense of relief or energy. It's that feeling of, I'm not alone in this anymore, which can be invigorating. Instead of leaving drained, they leave lighter and more hopeful. A strong bond with the therapist can rejuvenate clients' emotional energy because it's inherently uplifting when you feel connected. Secondly, empowered action. Clients start to develop the ability and motivation to take positive action in their lives. Why? because the support and confidence they internalize from the therapeutic relationship, well, that fuels their courage outside. For example, a client who feels bolstered by their therapist's belief in them might finally set a boundary in a toxic relationship or take a step toward a long-held goal. See, the relationship creates a secure base that empowers the client to act. Thirdly, increase knowledge or clarity. In the safety of a good relationship, clients learn more about themselves. They gain clarity on their feelings and patterns. Talking with a therapist who genuinely gets it often leads to those aha moments. Oh, I never realized I do that with people, that I keep them at arm's length, that I hold them at bay until I feel safe. The mutual understanding in the relationship allows clients to see themselves and others more clearly without the fog of defensiveness or fear. And number four, a greater sense of worth. Perhaps one of the most beautiful rewards, right? A healing relationship helps clients feel worthy and valuable. When a therapist shows consistent caring, respect, and positive regard, the client gradually internalizes the sense. I matter. I am worthy of love and respect. Now, this directly combats feelings of shame or low self-esteem that many clients carry. Over time, as one client said, I started seeing myself through my therapist's compassionate eyes, and I realized I deserve kindness. That is so huge. It can change the trajectory of someone's life and relationships outside of therapy. And number five, desire for more connection. A positive therapeutic relationship can increase a client's capacity and desire to connect with others in healthy ways. It's like it opens a door that was closed. A client learns, often by experience, that relationships can be safe and nurturing and not just painful. This can lead them to seek or improve connections with friends, family, or community, which further enriches their life. Essentially, good relationships beget more good relationships. It's a ripple effect. Now, these five things that Jean Baker Miller described from relational cultural therapy illustrate the holistic benefits of a strong therapeutic alliance. They go far beyond simple symptom reduction, but they speak to growth and thriving. Let me share other examples from published case studies. So a woman in her 40s, we'll call her Nora, came to therapy after years of high-functioning depression and loneliness. She had been through various self-help programs and one prior therapy that focused mainly on cognitive techniques. Nora dutifully did her thought records and behavioral activation homework, and she did see improvements in her daily functioning, but deep down she still felt empty and alone. In her new therapy with Dr. M, something different happened. Dr. M was trained in a relational approach, and in their sessions, Dr. M did something radical. He actively expressed care for Nora, not in a flippant way, but sincerely. For instance, when Nora skipped a session to test if he would notice, he gently said next time, "I was thinking about you, Nora. Last week you didn't show, and I was hoping that you were okay." Nora was struck. No therapist had said anything like that to her before. In another session, Nora talked about a childhood memory of falling off a stage during a school play and how everyone had laughed. She had tears in her eyes. Dr. M felt his own eyes well up and he softly responded, "I'm so sorry that happened, Nora. You didn't deserve that humiliation." He didn't hide that he was moved. Nora later said that in that moment, seeing the empathy on Dr. M's face, she felt a wave of validation wash over her. She thought, "Finally, someone cares about my pain." Over time, Nora's depression lifted, not because she restructured her thoughts, but because the relational experience itself was healing her old wounds of feeling unseen. By the end of therapy, Nora remarked that she now feels capable of seeking friendships and maybe even romance, which she had avoided for decades. The techniques that Dr. M used were not dramatically different from her first therapy. The difference was that he brought his full self into the relationship And that made the therapy truly corrective and life-affirming for Nora. Now, this is a case study adapted from Miller and Stever in 1997. So that's how this is beneficial for clients. But for therapists, for us, there are immense rewards for us too when we prioritize relationship. One reward is authentic pride and fulfillment in our work. It is incredibly rewarding on a soul level to know that just by being genuinely present and caring, we have helped another person heal. Now, I don't want to get too frou-frou and emotional about this, but there is a kind of sacred beauty in this. When I finish a session where I feel deeply connected with the client, maybe we shared a really special moment of understanding, or we had an aha realization together, I oftentimes feel a sense of awe. It reminds me why I do this for a living. Those moments are so sacred and so special, they sustain me through the tougher days. Psychotherapist and author Irvin Yalom, he writes about the profound mutual rewards of the therapeutic relationship. He noted that therapy is a two-way street. While clients grow, therapists often find themselves growing too, becoming more compassionate and more self-aware through each encounter with clients. Another reward is that focusing on the relationship can actually improve our outcomes, which in turn boosts our confidence. When you see clients making real progress and attribute it, at least in part, to the strength of our connection, it reinforces trust in this approach. It creates a positive feedback loop. Strong relationships make better outcomes. You feel good and continue investing in relationships, making them stronger, which gives you more good outcomes, and so on. Also, there's a reward of ongoing learning. Every authentic connection with a client teaches us something. It teaches us about resilience, about human complexity, about empathy. It keeps the work interesting and rich, because no two relationships are the same. So there's this creative, alive aspect to our job when we embrace relationship-focused work, as opposed to delivering manualized treatments, which can become rote. From a relational cultural theory viewpoint, therapy is not a one-sided, therapist-fixes-client kind of endeavor. It's a relationship in which both can learn and benefit. Now, of course, the focus is always on the client's needs. But therapists often report feeling changed by their interactions with clients in meaningful ways. I'm sure that you can think of a client who taught you something or inspired you. Maybe by being open and empathetic with a client's struggle, you found new empathy for a similar part of yourself. Or by encouraging a client to have courage, you reconnected with your own courage. This is oftentimes a dual process. These human moments are gifts that keep us emotionally alive and growing in our career rather than being burnt out or detached. To quote Carl Rogers again, he wrote about the beauty of the person-to-person connection in therapy, describing it as two people in a moment, each of whom is changing and growing, each of whom is allowing the other to be real. When that happens, therapy becomes more than a job. It becomes a profoundly meaningful human experience. And isn't that what we hoped for when we started on this path? As we wrap up this exploration, I want to leave you with a gentle encouragement and a reflection. We've journeyed through the idea that the therapeutic relationship is at the heart of effective therapy, more important than any single theory or technique. We've looked at why therapists sometimes shy away from leaning into that relationship, our training, our fears, our professional norms, and what it costs us and our clients when we do. We also discussed how it takes courage to approach our work relationally, to be genuine, to be vulnerable, to sometimes go against the grain of a more detached stance. And we shined a light on the rewards, the deep healing for clients, and the meaning and growth for therapists that blossom from prioritizing human connection. If there's one takeaway, let it be this. The real healing technique in therapy? Well, that's love and authenticity. A professional boundaried love, absolutely. but a love in the broad sense of profound caring and acceptance. Theories and methods give us maps, but the therapeutic relationship is the actual terrain where change unfolds. As therapist and author Miriam Greenspan wrote, techniques don't heal people, relationships do. Techniques don't heal people, relationships do. And as you cultivate those healing relationships, remember that you're also a beneficiary of them. You know, I think about this often. If the pain came in through a person, the healing is going to come through a person. And then I also have to share with you a South African word, and it's a word you might be familiar with. It's the word Ubuntu, which means, in being seen by you, I see myself. In being known by you, I know myself. There is no knowing of self outside of community. So I invite you, in your next session or in your next conversation, experiment with this. Prioritize the relationship. Maybe it's as simple as allowing a warm silence while your client gathers their emotions, conveying through your presence that you're right there with them. Maybe it's taking a small risk to say, I'm really moved by what you just shared, instead of just, I understand. Find your own authentic way to lean in a little more. Notice what happens. My bet is that you'll find it opens new doors for the client and perhaps for you too. I want to thank you for spending this time with me, reflecting on something so fundamental and heartfelt in our field. It's a topic that is so near to my heart, and I hope that it resonated with you. If it sparked some ideas or feelings, hold on to that and let it simmer. Therapy is often called both a science and an art. Today, we delved into the art part, the art of relationship, supported by some science as well. Keep being courageous and compassionate with yourself as well as with your clients. As you head back to your office or your work or your studies, remember that you are the instrument of healing. By offering your genuine self in the therapeutic relationship, you become a catalyst for change in others' lives. And in doing so, you enrich your own life and practice more than any manual or protocol ever could. Thank you for listening. Until next time, take care of yourself and cherish the connections in your life, both inside and outside the therapy room. They are truly what matter most. May you be well.
The weather today will be glorious. Put on your sunglasses, sunscreen, and sun smiles. You're gonna love it.